As we explored in our last episode, technology and pop culture have helped to drive and shape the ways in which we connect and disconnect with each other. It can also simultaneously amplify and deconstruct social norms around dating and gender roles. On today's episode of Our Sexual History, we take a look at how the world's greatest communication tool, the internet, has been used to bring people closer together, but also to polarize and isolate us. And on today's show, we have technology writer and sometimes technology critic Roisin Kiberg. Roisin, thank you so much for coming and being on the podcast.
Thank you for having me on. It's very fun to be here.
Do you love our studio and how warm and quiet it is?
I do. I think it's like the inside of a cardboard box after you close it. If you've ever wondered what that mystery looks like, it's just loads of corrugated stuff. Corrugated foam. Yeah, I feel very safe. I feel like we could withstand the apocalypse here. You know, the corrugated foam in the
everything
studio.
Could fall down around us.
And it would absorb the shock.
Yeah. Which is interesting because we're going to be talking about digital dystopia kind of stuff today.
The horrors. The horrors of human interaction.
But first, I kind of wanted to talk about a little bit about how having the internet around for the past 25 years or so has meant we've kind of changed the way we interact with each other and how sort of subcultures that we would have seen 25, 30 years ago have kind of fizzled out. And now we have more subcultures online.
Yeah, I think one thing that online dating in general does is it compartmentalizes a part of your life, which falls somewhere midway between being an animalistic need. Like, we all need sex. We all need affection and hugs. And we can't just get all our serotonin boosts from yolks and weighted blankets. We were talking earlier for the lay listener about weighted blankets. I keep getting recommended them. They're a Kickstarter project where the blanket feels like it's giving you a hug. It's like, I keep getting recommended the ads and they know that I'm lonely, essentially. But, you know, I think that's what online dating is. It's sort of compartmentalizing a part of your life. You know, you think of the typical online dater. For me, at least, I started using it when I moved to London. Mm. And it was because I was suddenly a career person and I was living in this super fast paced city and I didn't know anyone. It was literally like the cliche, single female lawyer, I'm a busy girl. Although I wasn't a lawyer, I was a crap ad creative. I was rubbish at it and wasn't on nearly a lawyer's salary. But you know what I mean? It's like you don't have time suddenly in your life and you need to suddenly fill the gap that you've literally abandoned your whole social life and you're not getting laid. And you want to just get to know people. It turns that into this very simple function. You just go online. And I think with Tinder in the years since then, because back then that was 4 or 5 years ago and I was using OkCupid. Now it's really pragmatic. I think we've taken a cue from Grindr and, you know, it's really kind of just cut and dried, swipe with
Tinder.
Yeah,
it's really interesting because I feel like when I was growing up, you were friends with people because of your proximity to them, not necessarily because they're people that you would want to hang out with. And a lot of OkCupid, Plenty of Fish, people like that.
people on Plenty of Fish.
But you know what I mean? That it's based on an algorithm, based on what your interests are rather than your proximity to the, and I find it really interesting. So when I was a teenager, you had very, very much visual kind of subcultures where I was kind of a bit of a punk and I'm a massive goth. And and then you'd have the kind of country kids and then the rich kids and stuff. So everything seemed to be lighted up along those lines. And I don't really feel like we see that much of it anymore because I don't know if it's just because we're so busy now.
I think that corresponds to something much broader in culture, which is that we experience our interests in isolation in front of laptop screens. We're more often going to experience, say, the kind of music that we're into. I think as a generation, I mean, this is where I kind of come off like a cheesy advertiser again, but I think we are a kind of magpie generation in terms of our interests. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we experience a lot of these things in private. Now, that sounds like I'm just talking about porn or something, but it's that approach to everything. Everything is niche now. And I think I actually come off really nihilistic now talking about it, but like I do believe that like the world is becoming a much more atomized place. Like, we don't really interact with people very much, and we don't have these kind of community binding things quite as much, even in terms of like work. I work from home, I have no office, I haven't met half the people I work for, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, of course social opportunity to meet people and fuck people has declined along with that. So that is that kind of lays the foundation, you know, as that is on the rise, so society spawns ways to meet people, I think.
Yeah, so it's it's interesting that like we have so the ability to connect so much more than we ever did, and yet maybe we feel a little bit withdrawn and isolated more than we ever did before. Yeah. Which I know is like, that's something that I'm not the first person to say that. Like, no. Everyone, we've been saying that for like,
but
since
it's
the birth
so
of the
true.
Internet.
It's so true. And one thing that I find, I mean, we'll probably get into this later on, but like, one thing that I find really disturbing about a lot of the sort of dating subcultures, and particularly I'm talking about like the red pill and the PUAs, like the pickup artists and all of that stuff.
And we'll talk about that a little bit
yeah,
later.
I mean, that's a whole other kettle of fish. But one thing that I am noticing is, you know, in isolating sex, like the need for sex, and putting it there in your phone along with, you know, the apps you use for work or to order takeaway or to, you know, buy a book on Amazon and read a book on Kindle and all that jazz, by turning it into a need, which is part of like, you know, which can be satisfied with automation, it takes a lot of the human stuff out of the process. Like, I kind of, I don't want to sound really conservative, but you do sort of long for the days when you could just have really awkward interactions with guys and know that they wanted to have sex with you at some point, and you had to just sort of both fumble through the motions, and it was just really charming. I mean, obviously some men are pigs, but no, I mean, you do kind of long for, I'm just specifically talking about, I'm sure lots of women are pigs too, but now, what I'm noticing is that there's a sort of bleeding over of like, well, if I can automate, you know, the process of getting a date, then surely I can treat the whole thing like it's just a sort of engineering problem that I can solve. So I'm just going to game the woman, you know, so the app will see me up to the point of meeting her in some public spot, hopefully in public, in Dublin, you know, whatever. And then where do I go? I need to take, you know, the automation with me even further. So I'm going to go to fucking Roosh V and get advice on what lines to feed this woman and how can I, you know, kill her self-confidence and treat the whole thing almost like we're both a pair of machines. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the result of that algorithm of negging and peacocking and whatever, very outdated terms, I'm sure they have other ones now, but is that she sleeps with me. You know, so it's this sort of robotic attitude to human actions.
But is that necessarily the fault of automation, or is that more the fault of, you know, generations of... We've had that forever where like, you have this sort of masculine idea that if you do this, that, and this, you will, like... put tab A into slot B and then like this result will happen.
The IKEA approach to seduction.
Yeah. I mean, that's nothing new. That's been happening since long before the internet.
It's true. And I think it has its roots in like a very masculine branch. And I mean, you could actually, of self-help culture, but if you go back to like the sort of first big self-help books, they were all about bolstering masculinity. And I mean, it was framed as, you know, being about the working world, how to get ahead at work or how to win friends and influence people. But it was always, I would argue, it always corresponded to masculinity. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, but I do think that it's kind of a knock-on effect we're seeing right now, where like we're used to turning to machines, to computers, to mediation for everything, and we are now treating each other like machines. Like, we're kind of emotional cyborgs. We're used to, for me at least, I would say that some of the most intense romantic experiences of my life have happened on the internet. I'm one of those people who's really bloody awkward in real life, but I can say things on the internet. I guess it's a written culture, and I'm a journalist, and I love to write. And I do find, like, yeah, I mean, the upside of that is that we get to say the things we couldn't say maybe in real life.
Because you have much more, like, courage when you're kind of... So for all the sort of, like, bad things about the internet, there's some really, really sweet, touching, charming things.
I think so, yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about some of the really good ways in which the internet has helped us, like, you know, connect with each other.
I think it's helped us to be weirdos together.
I love that.
It has.
Yeah.
It absolutely has. I found this amazing thing. I was researching the kind of history of online dating, and it went into old personal ads. And so in 1727, the first woman put an ad in a Lonely Hearts column. Before that, it was only men. She was in England, and she's called Helen Morrison. And she convinced Manchester Weekly Journal to place a small ad saying she was seeking someone nice to spend her life with.
Aww.
And a man responded, except it was the mayor of Manchester, and he had her committed to an asylum.
Oh.
She was locked up. And like, that's, you know, and even if you think, I mean, obviously no one's getting committed, but if you think like as recently as the 90s, we were kind of, you would be seen as a bit odd for online dating, I think.
Oh yeah. Like I remember, like even when I first signed up for OkCupid, maybe like 5 or 6 years ago, I remember like my mom still being like, oh, you don't online date because like,
yeah,
you're only going to meet weirdos. I was like, yeah, but like, literally everybody is online.
Yeah, we are the weirdos, mister.
We are the weirdos.
Yeah, it's, I think OkCupid was a wonderful way to kind of get to know a city, mm-hmm. because it's sort of defanged everything. Like, I'd be going into work every day in London on the tube, and everyone stopped being intimidating to me because I could see the sort of weird subconscious of the people through OkCupid. Like, suddenly I was having these weird aimless kind of conversations, just you know, going on about how our day went, like between me and some random guy, and half of them I never met, some of them I became friends with, and some of them I dated, and like, yeah, it was just funny thinking of these people, like when they go home at night, this is what they're doing too, that like everyone's alone together essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was nice. I like it much more than Tinder. I really have to say I don't like Tinder very much.
I don't like Tinder either. I was on it for 24 hours, like all of yesterday.
You've been sampling the delights of Tinder.
Oh, it was awful. And I think for me personally, just because I can't, you know, I can't get a sense of someone based on a photograph,
yeah.
and like a 200 word description. I just can't get a sense of someone. So I just found myself like swipe left, swipe left, swipe left, because I can't be attracted to someone if I don't know that person. And it takes me like maybe a date or two to really get to know a person. It just seems very, and then I found myself, it was just such a time suck. Like, it'd be like me and my friend were just sitting on the couch, just looking on Tinder, and it was like 3 hours had gone by.
Oh yeah. It's and emotional,
like,
labor.
It's emotional labor. And I'm like, yeah. I've got shit to do. Like, I want to watch Netflix and embroider.
Yeah. Constructive, useful things to do with your time. I could only ever go, what became the hallmark of my Tinder experience was that I could only go on it when I was drunk. Mm-hmm. And I would usually end up going on it at the end of nights in taxis, because it would just be to fill the time, but also because at that point I would be drunk enough to kind of steel myself for the experience. And I remember I had it in my bio. I don't know what, like, it's the kind of thing people would think was a joke, but it was actually entirely real. I wrote that I normally only go on Tinder either when I'm drunk or on benzos. And I was prescribed Valium at the time for panic attacks. And it was only when tranquilized into like courage that I could actually face going on Tinder. Because otherwise it just feels callous to me. I love to, and like, I'm not even very good at, this is going to sound terrible, but like, I can never remember people's faces.
Mm.
Like, I only really remember something about someone when I learn a little about them.
Yeah.
And I'm only attracted to someone when they start, like, talking to me and I find kind of weird quirks in them that I find intriguing. Like,
yeah.
It's always about being intriguing. If I see a picture, it's just flat. It's just like, oh, you climbed a mountain. Congratulations.
Oh my gosh, the amount of photos of guys at Machu Picchu.
Yes! And tigers.
Is it drugged up tigers in Thailand? Yeah, I was very, very, I don't know if put off's the wrong word.
I don't even know what it said. Like, it's not, there's something creepy and overtly like, look at my mastery over this beast. It's sinister, I think.
Or like, look how cultured I am that I've like traveled. And like, yeah. I understand like the need to travel and experience things, but Machu Picchu, like all of them. But one thing I do really love about internet dating, not so much Tinder, because I don't know how you'd be able to really make this work on Tinder, but people who have very specific like sexual quirks or needs or wants that can be fulfilled in a way that was never really available unless you were living in a big urban center like New York or LA or San Francisco. You would have to kind of like steal up the courage to like move to those big cities, you know, go to clubs, like meet people, try to like suss out a community for yourself.
Yeah.
And now we have like some of the most kind of niche kinks and fetishes that people are finally able to kind of realize in a way that they've never been able to before.
Yeah, and I think that kind of buffer that people have, which is talking about it before, I mean, that's always been such a hallmark of the sort of sex positive type of like communities, that where, you know, it's like, you talk about consent, you talk about your limits and your kinks and all of this stuff, and then, you know, you enact them. And when you do these things on the internet, you have no choice but to talk about stuff up ahead, because it's an entirely text-based culture, essentially, aside from dick pics and all that. But, like, it really is just, you know, you have no choice but to talk about that. And that lends itself to people talking about their fantasies more.
Yeah.
I mean, like, even just in the more sort of vanilla parts of the internet, you know, like, I've just noticed that over the years. Where like the worst is when they like jump straight into talking about like really full-on stuff and you don't know this person very well, but it can be really cool because somebody is much more open to kind of talking, like even sort of creating scenarios in their head, you know. I think people have more long-distance relationships these days, and that lends itself to that sort of talk, and then it can become real as well, so that's a positive, I think.
One thing I really loved is this book that I wrote the foreword to, called Bear, and it's all Irish women's sexual fantasies.
Yeah, it was a compilation, wasn't it?
It was a compilation.
That's
so,
so
the person who, well, she, I want to say wrote it, but she collected all of these stories and stuff, and she wrote like her introduction and stuff. But I and all of the fantasies were like anonymous. They changed the names and stuff. They just gave like a generic name and like an age, and there was like all of these like wonderful collection of fantasies to kind of show that the Irish women like aren't all the same. Like they're you know, they're not all like mammies who are into
fantasizing about having a man to make a cup of tea for.
Yeah, but stuff like that does appear.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
There's
funny.
There was one girl who submitted a story about how her boyfriend was a guard, and she always wanted him to, like, you know, have sex with her, like, on the hood of his squad car.
And that became a reality. There was that woman in the video or something, wasn't there, in the news recently?
Oh, I don't know if it's the same. Like, this person was like anonymous, so I don't know. I hope that was like, I hope he read that and made that fantasy happen for her.
I think the internet has had a bit of a like zeitgeist of kink thing, where it's all become
but see,
mainstream.
I don't think we would have ever gotten that book if it weren't for the fact that people feel a little bit more comfortable talking about their fantasies, like especially online and stuff.
Yeah.
Because it's so like it's so sort of ubiquitous now that now we're getting things like offline that it like it's affecting, you know, everything.
And it's really funny how sex has always been a sort of cultural innovator on the internet. Like it's always been a carrier of new things. Like it's essentially always been. So I don't know, I can't say it specifically because this came up in like loads of things I was researching, but then it was always a little bit out of date, so it may not be this anymore, but it was always the case that basically the second most like profitable and biggest industry on the internet was dating, and the biggest was porn. And like that has always been the way, and so much of like the video software and the chat software and the dating software and all of these things that have kind of entered mainstream internet life first started within those industries, and specifically within porn. And even I was listening to a podcast, you know, Reply All, they made one about the Minitel and how within, I think, you know, within a few years of having Minitel, maybe even less, some guy hacked it so that there was a messaging function and that everyone liked that, so they kept it. But then, like, very soon afterwards, there developed these chat rooms called Minitel Rose, which was like pink Minitel, and it meant porn Minitel. And you would have like lonely hearts, you know, lonely men calling up these lines, or like chatting on these lines rather, not calling. But they were, you know, it instantly went to fetishes. It instantly went to
like old school Craigslist.
Yeah, absolutely. And the same thing happened with Usenet. Like Usenet was always, that's a real difference from like then and now, I think social media was a lot more compartmentalized. Mm-hmm. So like you wouldn't, because even it just cost money to go on, like to spend time on the internet. So you had to make sure you were on the internet you really wanted.
Yeah.
So like that's why spam was such a real annoyance and almost like a crime of the internet, you know, if you filled up a board, because people would have to like use their bandwidth to download that.
Yeah.
But like, you know, there were fetish boards, there were kink boards, there was even a kind of proto, it's really interesting. It really annoys me, though, because nearly all the scholarship around it is in Italian. There's a guy called Sergio Messina who wrote about a thing called Realcore, and it was like a sort of hybrid of Mondo, like Mondo porn, Mondo video, you know, like all of those.
And could you just explain Mondo porn?
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I'm like going nerdy now. It was just sort of clips from all over the place. Like, you know, the way porn originally would have masqueraded as, you know, nature videos about naturists or like an instructional about how to get a boner or, you know, like... these kind of faux instructional pornography videos. Mm. So it would be like a hybrid of maybe that and then some footage of some tribe of topless women, you know, somewhere in the world who just hate wearing clothes. And then maybe, you know, an instructional video of like lesbians or like, you know, really not instructional stuff at all. And then maybe some readers' wives were sent in as well, hopefully with consent. And then some weird exhibitionist people were there just, you know, having fun. And but anyway, yeah, the BBS boards were like nuts. I mean, there was, it really quickly just evolved on its own. Every fetish you could ever think of was there. And it's almost, I always mix up like ego and id, but you know, the kind of, which is the underside, it's just like it's always been there. People talk about the dark web now, that, you know, can you believe that there's this dark side to the internet, or this, like, not dark as in evil, but just dark as in unseen.
Yeah.
But there always has been.
There always has been. Just goes in different hand guises, in hand, different forms.
And sex has always been the kind of carrier of that culture. It's really fascinating. I guess it's just proof that that side of humanity has always needed a place to go, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the whole thing with like fantasies, actually, we were talking about a minute ago, is that one of the very first things I ever wrote about in terms of like technology and culture was this case. I don't know, do you remember this, the cannibal cop in New Jersey, I think?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
like the laws are still kind of trying to work it out, like.
So for everyone that doesn't remember, explain who the cannibal cop was.
Yeah, this is such a weird case, and people are always like, you know, you're so morbid, why do you read about these things? But like, it was really fascinating, and it really kind of called to task the politics of online life almost. You have this man who's a policeman, and he is, I think he's like in his late 20s, early 30s around this time, and he's like a good policeman, he's never been in trouble or anything, he does his job, and he's married to a wife, and he lives this double life on, I think it's on FetLife, one of those fetish websites. It's probably just FetLife.
Yeah, so for everyone who doesn't know, FetLife is a social media website for people who are into kink, bondage, fetishes, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and he's also on a few more niche ones as well, I think, dedicated to this particular interest of his, which is eating women. And he has these long-running dialogues about, like, tying up women and roasting them on spits, and it's clearly a sexual thing with him, and you know, it's incredibly developed kind of rich fantasies of he's like, and then they start to get personal, and he's talking about how he's going to barbecue his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And then his wife discovers it, and then she kicks him out, but then also calls the police and says, you have a policeman in your employ, like, who eats people. So then he's taken to trial, he's sentenced, but then I think he gets time in prison, but then eventually they appeal and he gets time served, and then he has to like wear a little ankle bracelet thing.
Yeah.
And he loses his job. But like, it was a really interesting case because obviously, yes, he does think a lot about, he has cannibalistic ideation, we could say, but, and you know, that's how he gets off, I suppose. So that's kind of dangerous. But then it's like, no, he went and found a place to let it all out. That was virtual. And yeah. Say if you just like, I mean, I've written about Minecraft and been like, I've had the most vile shit like thrown at me in Minecraft by like little boys, you know, like really graphic fantasies of killing people and hurting people and racism and Nazism and stuff. I mean,
yeah.
Should they all be locked up too? I you know, they're just idiots. Like,
yeah. So, but it does kind of like raise questions, like, if the fantasies that you have are something that is illegal, and I tread so carefully when, yeah, I talk about things like child pornography. There's people who believe that if you had like computer generated images, that that might be therapeutic.
Yeah.
I know, it makes me like so incredibly uncomfortable. But if it works, but then again, like I keep asking myself, like how can you ever do a study on this?
Oof. Like I don't know. Yeah. It's do you ever remember hearing about those bars that opened up in Japan where you could go and beat up an avatar of your boss?
I believe that anything is possible in Japan.
I love that.
There's also
I think that's great.
I heard about a particular club where there's like two levels, and the upper level is for women, and then there's like a perspex floor, and then you go down to the bottom level and it's just like all dudes looking up skirts.
Oh my. Well, fun times.
Yeah.
The more I was reading about, you know, the way they passed, I wish I could remember the name of it, but that law under Cameron, fucking net nanny David Cameron, but where, you know, all of the fetish stuff was essentially gone.
It wasn't that it was gone. It was that they made it illegal to produce certain types of fetish and bondage videos in the UK.
Yes.
You could still get it from outside the UK, but anything produced in the UK, it created a ban on things like face sitting.
Yeah, face sitting. Do you remember there were like face sitting protests?
Yeah, the face sitting.
Yeah.
So they protested this law. One of many protests where they had a few hundred partners who would just like sit on each other's face to tell David Cameron like let us do some face sitting.
I'd be carrying a sign that said like at least it's not a pig.
Yes. Yeah. You can't say that they don't have a sense of humor.
But see, apparently that's affecting, FetLife has shut down loads and loads and loads of kinks just in the last recent months. And it's between the legacy of that law and Jeff Sessions.
Banking.
Really?
Credit card processing.
Yeah, and it's making them police it much more. And some people, I saw that like Kitty Stryker was like, this is actually good. This is the first time I've sided with capitalism because it means that like, abusers are going to be held accountable now on FetLife because seemingly like they've been kind of hiding a lot of really bad stuff over the years, kind of at a cost to preserving their freedom of like having everyone else on the site.
Yeah.
But now it's much more tightly regulated. But it also means that you can't make reference to alcohol. You can't make reference to like rape scenarios, anything like that. It's all gone. Like consensual, non-consensual situations are gone. And I don't know how I feel about that. Like,
will it just drive it more underground?
Yeah, I'm sure it will. I think we're all going to have to learn to use the deep web eventually. I'm not saying I want to like have like fantasies of that, but like, you know, it's going to go somewhere. It's going to just hang around.
So, like my question would be if like for the small percentage of people on kind of like social media, and it's not just FetLife, like let's just be clear, like it's not just FetLife, it's like in every like any kind of community there's going to be assholes and abusers and like very predatory people. So how can we prevent abuse or prevent predatory behavior and have like accountability within a community whilst having our freedom of speech and freedom of sexual expression?
Yeah, and how long has FetLife been around for? It's a while, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like a long time. I mean, I wonder what the effect of the last maybe 2 years on just the mainstream internet has been on dating websites.
Mm.
Because I think, you know, fucking Milo loves to say the Overton window has expanded, but it basically means people are assholes now on the internet more. It's more normal now to be actually to have rape threats, to you know, have someone send you a picture of a severed head. Like, these things happen all the time, and it's more kind of normal, and it doesn't take away from it being horrible, but you know, people are used to it. So it's weird.
But again, that anonymized, the thing that allows us to express ourselves like more openly and unashamedly, also, this is why we can't have nice things, has meant that like people feel more courage to say really, really despicable stuff that they would never say in real, or maybe they would. I don't know.
And I wonder as well how that impacts on those who practice really aggressive kinks. Like, what does it mean when something which was once extreme becomes the practice of 14-year-old dweebs at home in their mother's homes. Like, what happens when, like, we were talking about this earlier, but that the book Kill All Normies, Angela Nagle's book, it's really worth reading, and it actually has a lot to say.
Oh yeah, you were telling me a little bit about this earlier.
Yeah, this has a lot to say on online dating, specifically the manosphere. But, like, she talks a lot, she almost reaches the conclusion that, you know, what we have to do is dispose of what edgy is. Edgy doesn't exist anymore, and we can't afford to be shocked. Like, and I don't think any of us are shocked by these little, like, alt-right assholes on the internet, you know. But we have to just throw away the idea that we can be shocked,
mm-hmm.
Because that's what's going to give us back power.
Yeah.
Once we can prove that they're just wasting their time. I mean, this is not the point of the book, but it's just a kind of point which arises in the course of the book. But yeah, I mean, what does that do for transgression in terms of, like, sexuality and the internet when there are no weirdos left? And in the wake of, like, Fifty Shades, you know, what does that mean? How can you be a weirdo anymore on the internet when, you know, granny is...
We're just full of questions today. Like, just listeners, we have no answers for for any of this. We just want to pose questions, and maybe you will write to us.
Yeah. Suggest some
tweet
alternatives to face sitting. No, don't. Oh, subject of, I brought you a list of the strangest dating sites I could find
of
niches.
Yeah.
Although I can't. I did, okay, as an intro, the only one I spent some time on was the infamous Atlasphere, which is the Ayn Rand dating website.
What?
Oh, yeah. It's been around a while. It's absolutely fantastic. It's
so
funny.
So how long has it been around?
Years. Yeah. And it's very sincere. It's, like, painfully kind of straight-faced sincere. And there are ads. This was my favorite part. There are banner ads for books in the margins of the site.
Mm.
And one was for Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Anyway, Poor Dad, I have no sympathy for. It's full of these, like, extremely earnest young objectivists presenting themselves as, like, strong men and rational women.
Yeah.
It's pretty sad.
So, like, if they're all into, like, their social Darwinism, do they just, like, accept the fact that if, like, one person finds another partner who's just, like, socially better than them, that they will then, like, jump ship and that's totally okay?
Oh, God. There's actually another site. I forget the name of it, but there's another site where it's that. It's, like, basically called goodenough.com or something. And it's, like, a couple goes in and they both submit their pictures, and then the members of the site vote which one is hot enough to join, and then they get a new partner.
What's this called?
I don't know. I've forgotten that one. Should have taken that down. It kind of reminded me of... there's, like, a subreddit called Am I Ugly?
Yeah.
And, you know, people submit pictures. Also, there's a really funny one. This was not in my research for today, but I just found it in the course of another... I don't know what I was... You know when you just find really weird stuff that just sort of stays with you? There's a subreddit called Hot Wife. Do you know about this?
I've heard of it.
It's about, like... It's kind of almost cuckolding.
Like, I've tried to stay away from Reddit as much as possible, and then I just, like, I get these little glimpses from friends who are on it, and I'm like, that's enough for me.
Anyway. Oh yeah. No, I mean, I really love hate about Reddit, because it's actually a really nice place in ways. Like, they're not afraid to go deep on the nerdery, you know, or whatever. That's a real cringy way to put it, but, like, you know, you'll find the answers to things that you never knew you wanted to know. But
so
this
what's
thing,
the deal with Hot Wife?
Oh yeah, Hot Wife is, like, it's like cuckoldry, but it's not properly. Like, it's that some guy, ostensibly a guy, submits a picture of his wife, and then...
Do the wives know about this?
I don't know. And then all the other men, like, hit on the wife. And then he's like, oh, I'm so humiliated. All these men are making a play for my wife online. But, like, you get the sense there's a lot of, like, men impersonating hot wives.
Yeah.
Or just trying to kind of get ego massage on, like, how hot their wife is.
Yeah, I, like, my initial reaction would be like, well, if everyone's consenting, then that's totally okay. But something tells me, like...
Oh, yeah.
I just have a feeling that there's, yeah.
It actually, this is how I found it. I remember now. It corresponds to another thing which I really want to write about, because I find it just so Reddit-y and kind of smarmy and gross. There's this whole thing. It's kind of a cliche. Like, you see people making jokes about it now on Reddit because it's been around for so long. But guys who submit pictures of their girlfriends and then say, my girlfriend doesn't know she's hot. Please reassure her. So it's like
your girlfriend is not reading this.
Yeah, like, I don't know why they're doing it.
And if she is, she hates you right now.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's so embarrassing. And it's so weirdly mawkish and kind of sentimental. And it's also, like, it's the ultimate fantasy of, like, this, like, I hate to say it, but like this archetype male douchebag Redditor who's like, you know, oh, girls, you know, it's like that Tumblr meme of the guy holding the sign like, girls, you don't need makeup. I like you just as you are.
But also,
you
know? But also this idea that like a girl's or a woman's worth, that the only thing that's going to make her feel better about herself is if like 10 million strangers tell her she's hot.
Yeah.
That's all we care about.
Yeah.
Is that people think that we're hot.
It's real Reddit logic. Like, on the upside of that, you have, you know, random acts of pizza. You have people sending pizzas to each other, to strangers. Like, that's really sweet. But, like, then you just have this sort of weirdly, just really awkward, socially awkward ideas that, like, they think are really good, you know? Like, of course, what's going to help this girl's self-esteem? You know, loads and loads of comments scrutinizing her. Like, no! No! But, yeah. Oh, yeah, here, I promised a list.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah.
Give
Sizzle,
me more.
Bacon Network. It's a bacon dating network.
For people who like bacon?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Salad Match. Same thing. Salad.
Lots of food-based...
Gluten-free singles!
I suppose that makes sense if you have like an issue with kind of irritable bowel, that kind of thing.
You can both shit together.
Yeah.
you can eat bread and then like, yeah, have a terrible night together.
Yeah.
Oh man, that's so grim. And then we get into the more less food orientated. Farmers Only, which I think is kind of in league with the old school, like, you know, lonely farmer.
Yeah, that makes sense. Bit of road frontage.
Bristler. It's a beard social network.
Ooh.
Tin Dog.
Tin Dog.
From Matching Dogs.
Ah, yes. Oh, there was another one, because I was looking this up for myself and my friend Peter Antonioni, who I do the economics of sex talk at like Kilgonomics every year.
Oh, cool.
I was like looking up Chinese dating apps, and they have like one that's like for pet owners, and so you submit a picture of like you and your pet together, like what kind of pet you have, and like you know, people who want to date each other based on like what kind of pets they have. I thought it was just so sweet.
Can you sign up if you don't have a pet and just be like a pet creep who dates four men's pets?
Maybe.
That would be me.
There's also, I noticed that about Tinder. There's a lot of pictures of guys with their dogs.
Really?
They'll lead with that because
they
know that chicks dig dogs.
It's a good test of a person, I think, if they like dogs. Wingman for hookups at airports.
Ah, clever name. I like that.
Tall Friends.
Wait, go back. Like, rewind to Wingman.
Wingman, yeah.
So people are hooking up, like, in airport bathrooms?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I guess, like, you get, you know, these long periods of several hours, and it's, like, really boring.
Have you ever been to the San Francisco airport?
No.
So they have a yoga room, and I was like, this is the most San Francisco thing ever. This is, like, this massive, like, yoga room where you can go, like, do yoga before your connecting flight. Yeah, if people are using Wingman and they need a place to, like, hook up, the yoga room in the San Francisco airport is, like, dimly litted and...
And just claim you were doing yoga.
I just said dimly lit. Yeah. My English is good today, guys.
And if you don't want to join that, you can join Zombie Passions.
Is this for people who are into zombies?
Yeah. I guess role playing as zombies, maybe. Lots of mauling.
Brains!
Women Behind Bars.
Oh!
It's quite sweet, really.
That's been going on, like, way longer than the internet. There's always been people who have been, like, pen pals with prisoners.
Yeah. Clown dating.
Okay.
Mullet passion.
Mullet passion.
Sea captain date.
Sure.
It's like something out of Arrested Development.
No, it's great. Everybody's, like, finding each other. I love this.
I would love to date a sea captain. You know, in Moby Dick, Captain Ahab, he has, like, a wife abandoned on the shore, and everyone talks about, like, she's a real hottie. He was mad to leave her behind. Sea captains get good women, like, yeah. And then the last one I just forgot to write down, but it's, I think it's called Feeler, and a friend of mine works for it, and it's in Ireland now. And
okay.
It's like a sort of fetish social network, I think. I think it's also for threesomes.
Okay.
Yeah. But they have an office in Ireland.
So is it like, it's an app or is it a website? Is it like FetLife or like how does it work?
No, I don't think it's a community. I think it's more like Tinder-based social
network. Right, yeah.
Yeah, it's more like, you know, I feel like a hot wife tonight. You know?
Like, if it's like a Tinder-based thing, how are you gonna like get like what people are. I suppose, I like, if you have like a little mini profile, but still, like, I just can't.
I know. I've not tried it yet, but I think it's like really. Sorry, I keep interrupting you. I think like there's something inherently quite lazy about Tinder, and I know people like that because it's low commitment. It's like a hookup app, not a dating app, I guess. But like the thing about it is, yeah, you don't put any effort in, you're not going to get much out of it. Like, yeah. I loved about the OkCupid that you wrote these like kind of painfully earnest profiles where you could like show off about yourself, and it was just nice.
I when I first joined OkCupid, I was like, oh, this is great. I'm gonna like, sorry, I'm just like super cynical about like dating right now, because like I'm finding myself like single for the first time in 5 years, and
it's all ahead of you.
Yeah, and I'm like already jaded by it. Like with OkCupid, I feel like that there are people who have learned to kind of like game the system. They know what kind of like photos people are attracted to. Obviously, photos of them with a dog.
Oh, so hot for men with dogs.
But I mean, like also the kind of you know, and we all do. Like we all want to put forward our best selves. But I just feel like even as I'm like typing in, you know, my interests and stuff, I'm like, what are the most pretentious things that I'm into? Oh, I will throw that up there.
You have loads to say about yourself that's really unusual and cool.
Yeah, but none that I want to put on a dating profile.
Okay.
But maybe that's what other, maybe I need to give people a chance, because that's, you know, probably what they're doing as well.
I always actually harbor the dream of like being a man on a dating website, like just applying male tactics. So this is where we get into the cynicism and the misandry on my part, at least. But like I spent large parts of last night and this morning reading about the red pill.
Oh,
and what really overwhelmed
me
was the sheer scale of the thing. That, like, it's such a vast empire of internet.
Okay.
Like, it's not just kind of, it may not be that many people, but like they have really created a whole, they call it like theory, the theory of the red pill.
Okay, Roisin, I'm going to back you up here.
Yeah. So, here we go.
Okay, so red pill.
You were in a room facing a man in a leather coat in a giant armchair, and he's holding two pills in his hand, a blue pill and a red pill.
And it's definitely not Morpheus for copyright issues.
Yeah, no, it's Schmorpheus.
Schmorpheus.
And one pill, the blue pill, will let you stay in the bubble, the dream that you're in, and continue happily on like a puppet, a pawn of the system. And the red pill will make you wake up and see the truth. Which do you take? You probably know what film we're talking about, The Schmatrix. For copyright reasons, but it lends that iconic moment in leather coat wearing lends
and
itself
really good sunglasses,
great sunglasses.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, Carrie Ann Moss was badass in those films, I think. But anyway, yeah. No, we have it lends itself to a vast sphere of disgruntled, horny men on the internet called the Red Pill. It's like a whole community. And it's really interesting.
Are they just on Reddit, or has it like seeped out into other areas?
It's definitely in other areas too. Like there's this whole thing, the manosphere.
Mm-hmm.
So it sort of borders onto, ostensibly like Red Pill is a whole way of seeing life. You know, it's that you've woken up and you realize that women run the world and that they're trying to rinse men for money and scheming, and they just want free meals, and they all have blue hair and problem glasses. How dare they? And, you know, they should be in the home bearing children. And it's this whole sort of neo-masculinity / blatant misogyny movement. And, you know, they see it as very much reality, the truth. They've taken the red pill, or they've been red-pilled. Actually,
So what are their like goals in terms of like they just want like what do they want? What is the end goal for them?
The Handmaid's Tale. No, no. I think their goal is actually just to get laid. But it's kind of spawned tentacles beyond that now. Mm-hmm. Like it's a kind of hybrid self-help movement community for, you know, guys who just are really desperate or pissed off or angry, and a sort of, you know, hive of people sharing tips. Like it sort of builds on what The Game did years ago, although I don't think Neil Strauss ever anticipated the red pill. I think he was just having fun with Courtney Love and co. Like, mm-hmm. But you know, it did sort of, people took that as doctrine and formed internet communities around it. And then you get your man in the funny hat. You get Mystery and other pickup artists. And then you get these more aggressive pickup artists like Rouge V, who claim to, you know, have advice not only on picking up women, but just on a whole way to see life. And it really just hinges upon that idea of gaming the system, gaming your way through life and being an alpha male.
And
so
do you think
aggressively masculine.
Do you think these guys actually believe that kind of stuff? Or are they kind of like, I mean, it's a really cynical way of like looking at the world, and one would think that perhaps maybe that cynicism translates to even that own like belief structure, where it's kind of more perhaps about getting a book deal.
With some, definitely.
I know, like, none of these people, like, I mean, I know you're a man who wrote the game. I read an article about him, like, recently, about how he's, like, happily married and has a kid now. And like,
I think he renounces bits of it. Like, he wrote a book about marriage.
It, like, said something, like, about how, it was all a joke. It was never meant to be taken seriously.
You know, I read the game. I found it quite fun. It wasn't anywhere, like, I have to say, I'm not overreacting here. I am quite, like, hardened for, you know, like, weird internet shit. Like, I look at this stuff all day to write about it. But, like, I have to say I'm quite disturbed by things I read on, like, Roosh V forums in the last day or two. I ended up having nightmares about it last night. Like, I actually had nightmares about the red pill. Like, it's just utterly dehumanizing tripe. And what really creeps me out about it is how, like, you can just become immersed in the whole thing so quickly that it starts to seem normal because it's everywhere you look, and it becomes this sort of paranoid way of living your life. And I think if you went back to the game, like, there's very little there that's that harmful. It's a bit cynical and a bit like trying your luck to get laid, and the promises that he makes. He never makes the promise that, like, Sunfruit Dan, you're gonna have superpowers or anything, but he does claim that you will have women throwing themselves at you. But, like, there's a period in your life where I guess that's kind of fun. Like, even, I don't know, like, I've mainly straight female here, but, like, I've definitely, when I was younger, especially, like, in my early 20s, gone out kind of thinking, you know, this is going to be an adventure. I'll try and pull someone, you know, whatever. Like, and I wouldn't go bragging about it to some weirdo on the internet, but, like, it was a personal thing. It was just a kind of fun way to approach life, that everything was there to be explored. And, you know, you actually would take advice if someone gave it to you on how to be better at that, because you're just learning, you're kind of on starter wheels or whatever. Learner, what are they called again? Training wheels? Training wheels for seduction, lol.
I get that. Like, I understand. And I think, like, people going out on the pole, like, totally fine, as long as, like, you're treating the person that you're sleeping with, or, like, the person that you're trying to seduce, as a human with actual, like, human emotions and needs and things. And, like,
and awkwardness is natural.
Awkwardness is totally natural. Yeah. And, like, it can be charming. Like, especially if, like, you throw your hands up and say, like, look, I'm sorry, I'm, like, really super awkward.
Yeah, I think that's really endearing.
Yeah.
And I think these guys, for them, it's, like, life and death. These guys on, like, Red Pill and Roosh V and all this stuff, I think they really hate themselves. It really shows itself in its most extreme form in people like the Elliot Rodgers videos, where he's like, you know, he just can't understand why people don't like him.
Yeah.
And he's just, like, there's something missing in that guy's head. Like, it's horrifying. Something not only, like, cold and sociopathic, but, like, he doesn't understand why people can see the sociopathy in him. Like, it's weird, isn't it? And he obviously thought that following a formula would help, this being the perfect gentleman, you know? And they have these very prescriptive ideas on not only what men should be like they're inflicting it on themselves because they're following all these rules, and some of them have taken it even further, and they're like, you know, eating paleo diets, and like they only, you know, they'll only work in certain things which are fitting to an alpha man, and they'll wear suits and stuff. And then they apply those same standards to women, and like,
toxic masculinity and the patriarchy hurts us all.
It absolutely is. And some of it is quite laughable. Like, I found this thing, they have this idea, I think it's called shit testing, where like they're convinced that a woman is going to like mess with you on the first date. So she'll show up and she'll have purposely like dressed down to kind of screen you and see if you're not, if you're like not shallow. So this guy was writing this account I was reading on like the Red Pill on Reddit, and he was like, oh, she showed up shit testing me, she was wearing flat shoes and no lipstick. And it was like, do you actually think that like women all walk around in high heels like all day? Yeah. Where do you get your, like, it's like a stock photo idea of a woman dressed for a date.
Hollywood?
To go to the cinema. To the cinema. And then he decided, never again. Like, I'll never date her again. It was so funny. Like, I don't know. I think it's the byproduct of living, like, the bulk of your life online, that you're going to have this anime vision of this woman, you know, like, or like,
because again, like, we self-select what we watch and what we view, and if all that what you're seeing is of women is what you see like in Hollywood or anime or mainstream porn, like all of that,
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I shouldn't shit on anime. I love anime.
Oh,
but
I
like,
love anime.
I feel like, yeah, it's the triumph of this extremely blinkered worldview. And that applies to everything from politics to job to, you know, your view on things like race and stuff. And then obviously your sex life too. And of course these guys aren't getting laid because they don't even know what women are like.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if that's what you think that a woman wears to the cinema religiously and that anything against that is like major transgression, where does that leave you, you know? There's nowhere to go. They hate women with short hair. Like, this seems
like
to be
sitting
like,
here with my short hair.
Bob, I think you're on
come
the borders
me,
of acceptable, I think.
Come at me, bro.
Oh man, like the fear that they have of women with short hair. It's like something from like the 20s when like women cut their hair to work in factories. Like, you think that it hasn't changed. Like, next they'll be having jobs. Like, oh my God. It's so bizarre. And I get the feeling that reading those lines, like all the negging and the pickup lines and stuff that I encountered on these parts of the internet, I just wonder how many of these I've met in real life and like how far some of them have gone. Like, I remember one time going to a guy's house and having sex with him. And then as I was having sex with him, noticing a copy of the game on his shelf.
Oh no.
But I kind of could forgive him.
Did you keep going?
Yeah, I did. And it was, but he was nice. And you could tell that he had just probably been given it by some guy who was like worried about him or something. It's just like kind of awkward, you know? But like, I think if I discovered that someone I was dating was spending time on, like, the red pill,
I would be worried.
I would be a bit worried because, like, they don't know. I guess maybe first thing I would do if I cared about them.
I'd say that would be a major red flag for me.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, to me it looks a lot like kind of a symptom of various, like, mental illnesses of, like, splitting. You know, that people do of, like, splitting the world into good and bad and black and white.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not really healthy to maintain these ideas. And the beauty of not even just falling in love with someone, but even just being sexually attracted to someone is often having your expectations subverted. Like,
but is that a like a mental health issue, or do you think that's just more of a cultural issue in that everything these days has been so polarized?
Yeah, I think we are obsessed
like,
with categorization. Politically,
everything yeah. is so polarized.
And I think that comes from living online, that like you want to exist, you want to be recognized on the system, so you give yourself a label.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we are all searchable. We all have to have like human SEO now. And that applies to your sex life too. But yeah, I don't know. It's like, and it's really weird. I kind of combat this a lot. This can sound so fucking pretentious, but like, I don't really write about relationships very often, mm-hmm. partly because I'm scared that like the exes will come after me. And I feel like there are ethical qualms around these things too. And I'm not prepared to let someone else write about me. So, although I guess I'd be flattered if it ever happened. But like, so anyway, yeah, I don't ever really write about it. But like, sometimes I wonder how, you know, elements of sexual attraction and relationships, and really when it boils down to it, love, can't ever be conveyed on the internet. They just can't. Like, because I've just thought back on the last, like, sorry, this could be real navel gazing, but like, over the last, like, a few years more, maybe decade, I guess, of my life, like, who am I attracted to? What is my type? I have no idea.
Mm.
There's no type. Like, it's in the moment, the person, and what, you know, it sounds cliched, but it is like
but
weird
quirks.
But like,
if you have that click or that connection,
yeah.
Like, I've never had a particular physical type. It's like mostly been on like all the guys that I've dated. I've never dated someone that I've met. Like, I have met people online and gone on dates with people. But for me, it's like meeting people in real life and then just suddenly having that feeling like that person's really deadly and I want to hang out with that
yeah.
person more.
When I think about the things that I love about people, like, the latest was like the guy I was seeing. He would drink a yogurt drink every day. And it was so hilariously obsessive. Like, he would drink the same yogurt drink every single day. And one time, like, I collected him from his parents' house and his mother handed me a yogurt drink. And she was just like, make sure he gets his yogurt drink. Aww. And in that moment, I was just like, oh my gosh, this is lovely. Like, I really like this guy. You know, it was just the sweetest thing. But like, you would never, ever know that unless you knew him in real life. And it's really hard to pinpoint why. And there's no OkCupid question. Do you drink a yogurt drink every single day with obsessive precision and your brain doesn't function without it? But like, I do actually, which brings me on to OkCupid. I think OkCupid will stand in the future as like a really fascinating human experiment. And I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt compared to something like Facebook. I think they will stand as like a sort of modern day Kinsey. Like, they really do. They have been very transparent about the fact that they take data from their users, but they also have always given their users the benefit of that data. Like, it's always been about the questions. And I haven't actually read very much of it, but their founder, one of their founders, Christian Rudder, has a book called Dataclism. And it is, it's all about that. And it's all about like, his kind of what he's learned from OkCupid, but also about human behavior and data. And it is really interesting how like they very earnestly knew that they couldn't emulate real genuine love or sex or sexual attraction. But what they could do is they could like use machines in a very obvious way to set you up for that, to just ask questions, ask you what kind of answer you would like to hear from your prospective partner, and then like calculate it in some ways really complicated ways, but also in some ways really simple ways. It was literally just about asking important questions that might be deal breakers.
So you think OkCupid is going to have much more of a future than a lot of places? And where do you think like the future of dating is like leading us? Do you think we're going to that there's going to be kind of a revolt against apps and things in favor of a more like IRL kind of?
No, I don't think so. I read a book about this recently. It's Future Sex by a woman who writes for the New York Times. And the conclusions that she reached, like, I think she was trying to be vaguely positive by the end, but it was so depressing. Like, this idea that, like, she went to that stupid, it's been so written about already. I really hate people writing about it. You know, One Taste, the masturbation movement where, like, the guys massage the women's clits, basically. Like, and she went to Burning Man. And what I read, the only kind of conclusion that I reached from it, which I do agree with, actually, is that things are going to become even more atomized. Like, we will get even more used to compartmentalizing the part of our life that is relationships. Like, right now, there are women paid to be online girlfriends to people. And only, there was actually another book that's really good called The Answers that came out recently. And it's about that as like a dystopian dating experience. A guy hires a woman to be his emotional girlfriend and another to be his angry girlfriend and another to be his maternal girlfriend and another to be his sex girlfriend. And like, they all come to his house at different times of day and fulfill like specific needs. But I think that is an augury of where we're going. Like, I think we are going to get used to the same way that, you know, we go to the gym for like that set time of day to get the exercise out of our system, and we cram as much nutrition as we can into a smoothie for our breakfast. And then we're going to cram as much sex into the sex situation and as much romance into the romance situation. Or if we're aromantic, we won't have any at all. Or if we're asexual, we won't have any sex at all. And people will become really pragmatic about it, because the reality is that like social interaction is becoming itself more precise. There's less kind of serendipity to life. Everything is engineered for us. And I mean, I was like arguing with my younger brother just earlier actually about like whether technology could ever be halted. Like, and he's an economist and he has these like very rational views on things, and I'm much more emotional about these things, but I really don't think. I think it's already.
Do you think this is because of capitalism?
Yeah, I think love is capitalism too now. Like, and we have to fight to keep that away from it, really. I mean, apparently Facebook can now predict when a couple is going to break up. Mm. I'd love to know if Facebook can predict my relationships, because I've never once put not since I was like in my teens, I never put like in a relationship on Facebook. So I wonder, do they know? It's kind of like that famous story about on the Amazon with the pregnant woman.
The girl who, found out she was pregnant. Like, well, didn't find out she was pregnant through Amazon, but Amazon knew before she did.
Yeah, they were recommending her. Like, but then Facebook always gives me ads for pregnancy tests.
Yeah.
It spooks me. I only recently started reading the book Testo Junkie. Do you know this book?
No.
It's so cool. It's the writer's called Beatrice Preciado, I think it's pronounced, when the book came out, but I think they are now called Paul, so they might be a he. But it's all about just experimenting with black market testosterone.
Okay.
And it talks about how the word gender only really came about in 1957.
Oh, wow.
And the word cyborg only came about in the early 60s.
Yeah.
And it just makes me think that so much of our concept of gender is tied up in technology too. Like, actually, another thing I was looking at here was the first dating service online was in 1959, and it became commercially available in 1965. It was called Operation Match, and it was these two Stanford guys. No, first there was one called Happy Families Matching Service, and you would go to the mainframe, like the big, I think it's IBM's big mainframe,
yeah.
And these two Stanford students had made a kind of just algorithm that would ask you a few key questions, like OkCupid, mm-hmm. and you'd pay $3, which was the equivalent to about 20, and it would make you a match with someone in the area.
Oh, amazing.
But it's so funny how, like, the ways that we perform gender today hinge on technology so much, I think. Like, mm-hmm. the way that women take more selfies than men, or that people might, you know, kind of find new ways to express gender on, like, social networks and on dating networks, too.
Yeah.
Like, I never dated women except on the internet, through the internet in London.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be too scared to do it in Dublin because I'm not part of, like, a lesbian community, and I feel like I just would be out of place. Like, people would think I was pretending or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, I just think, you know, the internet gives you that terrain to just not be something other than yourself, but to just, like, work out who you are, even. It's interesting.
That is really, really interesting. But I think we are running out of time. But
can I shout out one last person?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, it's really important because he's my future husband. Wealthy Serbian Bachelor. If you look up Wealthy Serbian Bachelor on knowyourmeme.com or really anywhere on the internet, the man's been all over the gaff. He's a wealthy Serbian man. He owns a fur coat. He likes to wear silk pajamas.
Is he real?
I don't know. No one really knows the mystery of Wealthy Serbian Bachelor, but his picture is about himself looking for a young bride. He was actually looking for a 16 to 20-year-old woman whom he could show the riches of life to.
On that note, I think we'll leave it there. Roisin Kybird, looking for love.
Thank you for having me on. Lock up your Serbian bachelors. I'm on the prowl.
And we'll see you guys next month. Thank you so much to our guest today, Roisin Kybird. All of the books that Roisin recommended today will be in our show notes, as well as an article that I really wanted to talk about and didn't get a chance to. It's one of the best written pieces I've read in a really long time about a rift in the furry community caused by the rise of a group of white nationalist furries. It's a really fascinating look at not only a sexual subculture in America, but also how racism and right-wing politics are playing out there. I highly recommend it. This episode of Our Sexual History was produced today by my brand new producer, Megan Fox. I'm so excited to have her on our team. She's going to help me make the show a million times better, and I hope you'll join me in welcoming her to the show. Welcome, Megan. Our music was created by Shane O'Sullivan, and Sheena Flynn did the artwork. If you enjoyed this podcast, do us and yourself a favor by subscribing on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. That way, you'll never miss an episode. And make sure to listen to some of our other great podcasts in the Head Stuff family. We've got some awesome new shows like 12 Angry Minutes with Roisin Agnew, where guests rant on for 12 minutes about some of the surprising things that make them angry. Also, our bi-weekly food program with Relish. Finally, as we're in our second season of Our Sexual History, we're looking for sponsors. If you'd like your company to feature alongside fun, informative, dirty talk, please get in touch with us at sexhistory@headstuff.org.